A message. This film is inspired by actual events. Now, seagulls fly in a cloudy sky. Titles appear. Patty Duke is Beth. Tracy Gold is Lori, to face her past. David Ogden Stiers, Gabrielle Carteris, Maurice Bernard, and James Brolin as Greg. This program has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding from Lifetime. Described by Nikki Zada, Justin Soul, Dutch Priest, and Matthew Christofferson. Read by Pat Lentz. Executive Producer David Brooks. Executive Producers Judy Rannan, David R. Ginsburg. Written by Renee Longstreet. Based on an article by Jane Kesner Ardmore. Directed by Stephen Schachter. Now on a pier, a middle-aged woman approaches a tall, rugged, white-haired man. The auburn-haired woman gazes at him hesitantly, then smiles. He returns the smile.
You call, and I still come running. Old Beth.
Hi.
It's 20 years, and it's just the way we left it, huh?
Ocean's a little dirtier.
You know, last time you called turned out to be one of the greatest weekends of my life.
He strokes her hair.
You're beautiful. You're still so beautiful. Megan looks like you.
I think so.
Well, we made a great kid, huh?
She stares at him worriedly, then gazes off.
It's a long way to drive just to say hello. I'm divorced. For nearly a year, you know that.
She nods absently.
Yes.
I was hoping maybe that's why you call.
It isn't.
He puts his hand on her shoulder.
Please.
Please what?
Greg, please, let me say what I have to say. In all these years, I've never asked you for anything. And I wouldn't be asking you now.
Tell me you don't still love me.
Her brow furrows as she gazes into Greg's eyes. He leans closer.
You can't, can you?
Her shoulder-length hair rustles in the wind as she looks out at the ocean. The breeze ripples the blue water's surface. Now, in a flashback, Beth stands in a sunny kitchen and washes dishes. With a paper towel, she dries off a plastic cup and heads out of the room. Words appear, 3 weeks earlier. Now, outside, a rotund, balding man steps out of a moving truck.
Boxes, I need boxes! My truck needs boxes!
A young woman carries a box to him.
Whoa, 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 wait a minute. Who said you could have my pastels, pal?
Oh, you don't want those. They're just a bunch of stuff.
Inside, Beth hugs and kisses a toddler.
I miss you. I'm going to take you to that pond, yes, and show you. And the big fishing, yes.
Outside.
Where's Molly?
Molly is having a snack.
Oh, she can't be feeding her again.
What a bet.
It's your mother.
A dark-haired man carries a bike.
Give me a hand, will you?
Sure.
The balding man claps.
Oh, bad. What a bet.
Yak, 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 yak.
The young woman heads inside.
Oh, I already fed her and cleaned her up. She was hungry.
She was not. Molly, tell your mother you were hungry. Get me off the hook here.
Oh, right. Four more boxes from the shed and we're out of here.
So soon I was going to call out for pizza. 2 days and you'll start to love the quiet.
As her daughter carries her granddaughter out, Beth gazes down.
Bye. See you later.
The moving truck pulls out of the driveway and the young woman's parents wave. As the truck drives away, the couple exchanges a look. He watches her as she heads inside. Passing a folded cardboard box, he stoops to pick it up, then heads off to the side of the house. Now inside, Beth vacuums a loft area. She runs the red vacuum alongside a bed, then turns it off. Gazing down at the room below, she smiles as her eyes focus on an empty crib. A border of colorful wallpaper lines the wall beside it. Rocking horses, teddy bears, and a toy chest appear on the decorative paper. Now in a flashback, a young woman sits in a rocking chair holding an infant and the stuffed animal. She smiles brightly as she shows the teddy bear to the baby. The infant gazes at the toy, and the young woman touches the bear's nose to the baby's. The infant smiles.
Beth, come out of there. Megan needs to take a nap.
In a doorway, a middle-aged man sighs heavily. Beth comes out of the room and faces him.
Why do you walk in there like that?
I haven't seen Megan all day.
Think of your baby, Beth, not always of yourself.
Now, back in the room with the teddy bear wallpaper, the balding man enters and looks at the empty crib.
Beth?
He holds a bottle of wine and two glasses. Beth smiles as she gazes down at him.
You think it's too soon to call him?
He nods.
Yeah, I think so.
She steps down from the loft.
She's probably putting Molly to bed anyway.
Honey, graduate school wasn't going to last forever. You knew that. It's not like you're losing another child. You're going to see him again.
I know.
Like tomorrow.
No, I am not going over there tomorrow.
Huh? Whatever you're saying. I thought maybe we could...
He raises his eyebrows.
Celebrate a little?
Celebrate?
Hmm. It's the first time we've had the house to ourselves. I don't think I'm going to miss Barney or the Lion King. You?
I kind of like Raffy.
Raffy. I forgot Raffy.
They clink glasses. As they sip their wine, the couple gazes around the empty room. Nighttime. A small Spanish-style house sits under an indigo sky. Inside, the young woman opens a moving box.
You're an aspirin. Which box would you be in? You know where the aspirin is?
I don't know. You look white, sweetheart. You hungry?
No, nauseous.
Well, that's because you have a need. You want me to fix something for you?
Thank you. I'm going to put her to bed.
Molly sits in a playpen. Her mother walks toward her, leans over, and picks up the toddler.
Oh, yes.
They move down a hallway and enter a dark bedroom.
This is your room.
She turns on a lamp.
What do you think? Do you like it? I told you all your stuff from Nanny's would be here. Look at your carousel. Yeah. Who do I see over there? Is that Cloudy? Is that Cloudy?
With Molly in her arms, she walks over to the crib and reaches inside. As she leans over the railing, she blinks hard, then opens her eyes wide several times. She picks up a doll clown, then drops it and tightly grips the railing.
Molly?
Her hand releases the railing. Now in the kitchen, her husband Jesse looks toward the hall.
Lori?
He heads to the room.
What's going on?
Lori lies unconscious on the floor. Molly sits next to her mother.
What happened?
He rushes over. Now at a hospital, Lori's parents meet Jesse and Molly.
It's still an emergency. They called a hematologist.
Why?
Something about the preliminary blood test. They're talking about white count, red count. She's coughing up blood, abnormal cells. Then they tell me that they want to run more tests. I mean, I don't know.
Inside, a nurse approaches.
Mr. Molina?
Yes.
We're moving her now.
Here, let me take Molly.
Lori's father, Ken, takes the baby as Jesse and Beth follow the nurse. They quickly move through a busy hallway.
Where is she going?
The doctor's ordered a bone marrow biopsy.
A biopsy?
It's a precaution.
Against what?
They approach Lori, who lies on a stretcher.
Welcome with the drive, honest.
We were in the neighborhood.
Where's Dad?
With Molly.
You can wait in the reception area. This will be a while.
You'll be right here, sweetheart. I love you.
They stare after Lori as the nurse wheels her down a long corridor. Now, in a hospital room, Lori lies in a bed. Jesse sits on an adjacent bed facing her. Beth sits on a chair at the end of Lori's bed, and Ken stands beside it. A doctor enters.
Good morning.
She holds Lori's wrist and looks at her watch.
How are you feeling today, Lori?
You tell me.
Lori's family stands. Jesse and Ken smile tenderly at her. The doctor releases her wrist and looks up at the family.
I'm afraid I don't have very good news. There were some irregularities in the initial blood workup, and the bone marrow biopsy I did confirmed the early findings. Lori, the tests show that you have acute lymphocytic leukemia.
Ken gapes and looks at Beth, who cinches her brow and lowers her gaze.
What does that mean?
It's a particularly virulent kind of cancer.
Jesse drops his head and puts a hand on his mouth as Lori squints at the doctor.
I've had two pathologists look over the biopsy, there's no doubt.
But I have a baby.
I know.
What do we do?
I've already spoken with the Fryman Young Cancer Center, and they can admit you this afternoon. They will start aggressive treatment immediately.
The doctor glances at the family.
I'm going to leave you all for a little bit, and I'll come back through.
The doctor leaves. Lori's husband takes one of her hands, and her father grips the other. Lori sits up, and Jesse embraces her. As Lori sobs in her husband's arms, her father caresses her hair. Beth stares off, wide-eyed, then sinks into the chair. Her head trembles as tears well up in her eyes. Now at the Fryman Young Cancer Center, Lori's family sits with a bearded doctor.
Now, we've taken a number of factors into account, and we feel that the most desirable option would be to give her massive doses of chemo as soon as possible. Now, what that means is that her bone marrow gets destroyed along with the cancer cells. So, before we can do that, we have to find an appropriate donor for a bone marrow transplant so we can, in essence, replace what the chemo wipes out.
A transplant?
Well, it's not terribly complex. It's not like giving her a new organ. What we do is find an appropriate donor, harvest the bone marrow, infuse it into Lori, and hope that the body accepts it. Now, two issues come up. One is the basic danger, given the magnitude of the chemotherapy.
She might not survive it.
That's right. And the other is the problem of finding a match.
But if you find a match, and she survives it, she could lead a normal life?
We've seen 10, 15 years. In some cases, even more.
Could one of us be the donor?
Possibility of finding a match with a parent is remote. But not unheard of.
What about Molly?
It's about the same as with a parent. The best possible odds come with a sibling, but still only one in four.
Ken and Beth swap a look.
But now, if you two want to go ahead, we need to test your blood first.
Absolutely. Beth?
As soon as we can.
Being a donor really isn't dangerous. It's just uncomfortable. You'll be weak for a bit, but the body replaces the bone marrow very, very quickly.
And what happens to Lori while we're waiting to find out?
Well, we continue with the chemotherapy until we can find a match and she's strong enough for the procedure. She should be able to go home in a few days.
That should make her happy.
It did. Why don't you give me 20 minutes or so and then come on down to the lab.
The doctor touches Jesse's hand.
Thank you very much.
As the doctor walks off, Beth clutches Jesse's hand and Ken rests her other hand in his. Now, Lori wears a hospital gown as she sits in a chair. Tubes run from her arm to a machine beside her. She sighs heavily, then leans her head back. Now, Ken gets his blood drawn as Beth stands next to him. As a lab technician inserts a needle into Ken's arm, the balding man removes his glasses. He and Beth avert their eyes. Later in the hospital, Ken walks down a busy corridor. A curly-haired woman approaches him.
Excuse me.
Hmm?
Are you Ken Bradfield?
Yes, I am.
I'm Janet Davis, Lori's social worker.
Hi, Janet. Nice to meet you. How's she doing?
She just got out of chemo a couple hours ago.
Oh.
When you have a minute, I would love to sit down and talk with you and your wife and answer any questions you may have.
That's very kind. Thank you, Janet.
You're welcome.
Help me.
Straight through down there.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Now, in Lori's room, the young woman lies in bed. Her father enters.
Oh, good, you're awake.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm sorry, honey, I could not sneak the baby into the hospital. Did the next best thing.
The clown
Mommy.
Doll.
How is my baby?
She's doing really good.
So you're playing hooky again?
Yes, this is one of the perks of being your own boss. I refuse to fire myself. Saw the mural that you did for Molly's room.
Pretty good, huh?
A little too good. Not sure I like the competition. You're getting to be better than me, pal.
Not on my best day.
He touches her face. Lori smiles at him, then looks down and shakes her head.
Sweetheart.
She looks at him.
You've got to stretch a pretty rough road coming up. I want you to know that your mom and I are going to be with you and Jesse every step of the way. You need to know that.
They embrace.
Dad?
Mm-hmm.
I feel sick.
Oh.
He rubs her back as she vomits. Nighttime. Ken gazes out of a hospital window as Beth approaches him. He turns to face her, and they stare at each other briefly.
Did you check with the lab?
They won't know anything tonight.
If this doesn't work...
It'll work.
The chances are remote. That's what they said.
Yeah, I heard what the doctor said.
If there's no match, we're going to have to find Megan.
Megan doesn't even know me.
She's Lori's sister. We have no choice.
They walk through two automatic glass doors and head outside. As the couple continues down a rain-slicked sidewalk, the automatic doors close behind them. Now, a green Jeep Grand Cherokee pulls into a driveway. Lori climbs stiffly out of the front passenger door. A nubby wool cap hugs her scalp. As she opens the rear door, her mother comes around the car.
I'll get it.
I can help.
I'll get it.
Beth picks up a bouquet of flowers as her daughter heads inside. Later, Lori explores her neatly decorated kitchen.
Now remember, I'm not finished yet.
I wanted to do this myself.
I know.
Beth sets the flowers in the sink.
You could have asked me where I wanted everything. I'm not helpless.
I'm sorry, sweetheart. I didn't think you'd
That's
be up
just
to...
it. You didn't think.
A blank expression fixes on Beth's face as her daughter walks out. Later, Lori lies in bed, playing distractedly with a fringe on the end of her blanket. Her mother carries in the flower bouquet and sets it on a dresser. Lori lies with her back to her.
Did you bring the cards?
What?
We always play gin rummy when I'm sick.
Beth smiles faintly.
And then I got better.
Beth leans over her daughter.
You're going to get better this time, too.
Lori faces her.
I'm sorry about before.
Oh, honey, it's okay. You can move anything you want. I just stashed things for the time being.
I know the way you stash things. Martha Stewart could take a lesson.
Oh, you're a riot. Go to sleep.
Grinning, Lori turns away and hugs the blanket to her chest. Beth caresses her shoulder, then leaves, shutting the door behind her. Lori folds her arms and closes her eyes. Later, in the kitchen, Beth sets a dish in the sink, drops a bib on the counter, and leafs through some mail.
Beth?
She stares off distantly.
Did you pass the butter cake? When did you get the letter?
A flashback.
Yesterday.
Greg write anything to us about this kid?
My word.
When did he say he wanted the three of you to move up?
When he comes back from Vietnam. Before Christmas.
The teenage Beth sits down at dinner with the middle-aged couple.
Does Greg think he's going to support you and Megan? He needs to finish school. Make a career for himself.
I know that.
What's he sending you? $100 a month?
Gonna get a job.
Before or after you finish 12th grade?
Part-time at first, then when I graduate...
Doing what? Can I get a job in a restaurant like your mother?
Nick.
She's just not being realistic.
I think...
Believe me, you don't know the first thing about raising that little baby in there. Nowhere close to it. This is not the time to move. I'll write to Greg. You leave it to me.
He takes a bite of roast beef. Beth eyes him crookedly, then stares down at her plate where she shifts peas with her fork. Back in Lori's kitchen. Beth puts down the mail. She picks up a cordless phone.
Hello. Yes, hello, Janet. Do you have the results?
She grips the edge of the counter. Now, a mural depicting gods and mythical figures on a mountaintop looks down over the lobby of a bank.
Right down here on your left.
A bearded man directs a woman across the lobby. Nearby, Beth enters through the front door and approaches a teller.
Excuse me.
Yes?
Jesse Molina, please.
Is he expecting you?
Just tell him, Beth.
Please have a seat.
As Beth walks off, the teller picks up a phone. Beth sits on a green leather couch, holding her purse on her lap. She stares off pensively.
You lied about your age on the marriage application, didn't you?
Now in a flashback.
It isn't fair to Greg.
He could have a good future. So could you. Just because you got pregnant doesn't mean your lives are over. You're only 18 years old. Sign the annulment, Beth.
Why is Greg letting you do this?
Because he knows it's the best thing. He knows the two of you have gotten in way over your heads.
The teenage Beth stares at the annulment.
If you love my son, you'll sign it.
The middle-aged Beth watches sadly as her younger self signs the document.
Beth?
Jesse approaches and Beth stands.
Ah. What's wrong?
The nurse's aide came early, so I thought I'd stop by on my way.
Jesse leads her to his office.
How you doing? You look tired.
I am tired.
He sits behind his desk.
Jesse. Janet Davis called. There's no match.
Not you or Ken?
No.
The baby?
Beth shakes her head. Jesse leans back in his seat, holding his fingers over his mouth.
Now she goes into the general computer pool.
Yeah, I know about their pool. Maybe one in a million chance.
They'll find someone.
Jesse looks away from her and rests his head on his hand. Beth heads around the desk. As Jesse sobs, she cradles his head to her shoulder. Our view pulls back past a window looking into his office. Nighttime. At the Bradfield house, Ken holds a cordless phone to his ear.
I'll take Molly with me and I'll let her pick him out. No, wait a minute, why not? I thought you liked Mickey Mouse. Will you do me a favor? Will you go to sleep, please? It's past my bedtime. Mom says goodnight. I love you, sweetheart. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
He kisses the phone, then hangs up. Beth follows him to bed.
How's she sound?
Good. She's making jokes. She chokes on some of them.
He lies on top of the sheets, and Beth sits beside him.
I'm going up north tomorrow, Ken.
He rubs her back.
What's good?
Beth nods distractedly.
What if they won't tell me where she is?
You'll do what you need to do, Beth. I know you.
Beth faces him as he caresses her arm with the back of his hand. He lies back on his pillow, and she rests her head on his ample belly. Eyes closed, Ken brushes one hand through her thick hair while he massages her back with the other. Later, the numbers of a digital alarm clock shine through the room's darkness, 3:45. Ken sleeps alone in bed. Now, a light shines in the window of a storage shed. Inside, Beth digs through the contents of a banker's box. She finds a faded pastel bib and holds it to her nose. She sets it down and picks up an envelope. Inside are a bunch of photos. One by one, Beth pulls them out. One shows her as a teenager holding the baby Megan, and another shows her pregnant standing between two other girls. Beth cocks her head and smiles. The next photo shows her and a dark-haired young man reclining outside on a blanket with Megan. Beth swallows. Now, in a grainy flashback, the teenage Beth holds the same photo. Beth packs a suitcase with baby clothes, then moves to a crib and tickles Megan's tummy. Greg's father swings open the door. Beth sees him and straightens.
Kate says you're getting ready to leave.
Signed your papers. Least you can do is knock.
You really think you can handle Megan all by yourself?
Guess we'll find out together.
You're selfish, Beth. You haven't even got a dime for a phone call. You really think about her for once. You know where she belongs. And that's right here. We love Megan very much.
Beth holds her baby.
I cannot let you take her.
Sobbing, Beth holds Megan close to her shoulder as the baby's grandfather glares at her. Back in the storage shed, Ken opens the door.
Here you are.
He steps inside and leans against the door frame.
Why would you want to see me now?
She stuffs the photos in the envelope.
After all this time.
Beth, you would have done this before if they'd have let you.
Not good enough. I'm her mother. And how am I supposed to tell Lori?
Beth folds the bib.
She'll end up hating me, too.
Why? Why would she hate you?
What else could she do?
What's she supposed to think of a mother who abandoned her baby?
Sweetheart.
Ken cocks his head.
Come back to bed.
He gives a warm smile. Beth's attention remains focused on the bib as her husband leaves. She replaces the bib inside the banker's box. Daytime, on a mountainside ranch, a horse grazes outside a fence along a road. Beth's Jeep Cherokee follows the road past two more horses and turns into a driveway. Beth parks beside a blue pickup truck and climbs out. Holding her hands in the pockets of her pink blazer, she steps toward a yard fence and stops. Beyond an old-fashioned wheel plow lies a white country house. Beth's mouth tenses as she heads toward it. Later, on the other side of the front door. A woman with short dark hair answers it. Beth stands outside.
Hello, Kate?
The woman cocks her head, studying Beth's face.
Can I come in?
A white-haired man appears.
Beth, you're looking very well. Life must be very good to you.
I want to see Megan.
That's not going to happen.
Nick.
Listen, Kate. We're not going to let you start up all over again. You must know that.
Just tell me where she is.
We're not going to do that. Now, don't force me to be rude, Beth.
I'm not here to cause trouble. Just give me a phone number, an address, and I'll be out of your way.
Beth, go home.
He shuts the door in her face. Beth knocks again. She holds her hand on the door. Nighttime. Beth talks on the phone in a motel room.
I had to pick up a new toothbrush and a few things like that. No, Ken. I'm fine. I'm going to find her.
She nods.
Okay. I miss you too. Bye.
Beth hangs up. Wearing a light pink blazer over her dark sweater and slacks, she grabs a bottle of pills as she stands up from the bed and crosses the room. At a mirror, she imagines a reflection of Greg making love to her in the bed. She stares sadly at the couple in the reflection, then turns and gazes at the empty twin beds. She slowly drops her eyes, winces, and glances about the hotel room. Daytime. On a desert road beside hills dotted with sagebrush, Beth's Jeep SUV sits under the hot sun. With furrowed brow and a determined frown, she peers through the windshield. The driveway to the Hollander Ranch lies ahead. Beth watches the gate to the wooden fence, then glances wearily toward the hills. She returns her focus to the gate as Vic's pickup drives out and heads down the road in the opposite direction. Beth starts the engine and watches till the pickup is out of sight, then puts the Jeep in gear. She drives down the road and turns into the gate. Kneeling in her vegetable garden, Kate spots her coming up the lane. The elderly woman peers from under her wide-brimmed straw hat. As the Jeep pulls to a stop, she stands and faces Beth.
You weren't supposed to do this. He only went to the drugstore.
Hands on her hips, Kate faces Beth.
I won't stay long.
You signed an agreement.
And I've honored it for almost 30 years. Now things have changed. I have another daughter. She's dying.
The lines in Kate's face deepen.
I'm sorry.
She needs a bone marrow transplant. Megan could be a match.
Kate lowers her worried gaze from Beth's face. Beth glances toward the house.
Katie's not even here.
With a furrowed brow, Kate meets the younger woman's gaze.
She works in Huntington Beach for a metal company. Come in the house. I'll give you the address.
In her boots, Kate steps over the wire garden fence and leads Beth toward the house. As Beth and Kate trudge up a hill covered with dry grass, three horses gallop past. Later, in the Hollander entryway, Beth's fingers gently touch the frame of a picture on a shelf. In one photo, a girl squints in the sunshine beside Greg and a younger child. In a golden frame, the baby Megan smiles at the camera. Amid porcelain figurines poised on the shelf, Beth smiles at another image of her daughter. In this one, the adolescent holds a soccer ball. Beth remembers watching schoolgirls playing soccer. In a flashback, she sits in a station wagon near a soccer field. As the girls race after the ball, the younger Beth gazes sadly at them. On the field, an athletic girl with auburn hair grins. As Beth watches, her eyes glisten with tears. Now, in the present, Beth's gaze darts abruptly away from the photo. She quickly sets the picture down as Kate approaches. Kate hands her a folded sheet of paper.
Thank you.
Beth leaves. Kate gazes after her, then closes the door. Now in an office, a young businesswoman cradles a phone on her shoulder. A desk sign reads, Megan Hollander. She nervously rotates a lump of blue clay in one hand.
Oh, Joe, that's funny. No, we are past the venture capitalists. These guys are all heavy hitters. Uh-huh, that's right. Oh, will you check to make sure that we have the 10K in the report?
A dark-haired woman enters.
Right, and make sure that Billy has all the right answers. Just keep an eye on him.
Megan motions to her assistant.
Okay. Right, well, I'll see you there. Bye.
Megan hangs up.
What's up?
A woman is here to see you.
Who?
She wouldn't give her name.
She leaves. Megan shakes her head.
All right.
Grabbing some paperwork, she heads off. On a wooden deck outside the office building, Beth picks up a business card and reads it. She smiles. As Megan strides out of the door, studying the papers in her hand, Beth gently pockets the card and gazes at the smartly dressed blonde woman. Looking up at Beth, Megan smiles broadly.
Can I help you?
Beth's eyes widen as she gazes at Megan.
My name is Beth Bradfield.
The younger woman tenses her shoulders.
I know it's been a very long time.
Megan coolly looks Beth over.
What are you doing here?
Beth meets Megan's gaze.
I'm your mother, Megan. Trust me. I know who you are.
As Beth watches, Megan turns and walks back toward the door. As she strides off, the young woman puts her hand to her forehead once. Gaping, Beth's throat muscles tense up. Later, along a footpath outside the building, Megan sits on a bench with a bag lunch and eats yogurt with a plastic spoon. Beth approaches.
Megan.
Megan's eyes remain on her lunch.
Whatever you're selling, I'm not buying.
I need to talk to you for a few minutes.
Why now?
It's important.
Megan drops the spoon into the empty carton and glances up with a wry smile.
You look younger than I imagined.
I was only 17.
Megan nods, looks away, and sets aside the carton.
Doing so well. A vice presidency.
It's just a title. They give it to you instead of money.
You must have earned it.
Rubbing her hands on her pants, Megan stands.
What are you doing here?
She folds her arms and stares.
You're so angry.
Well, what do you expect? I'm supposed to sit here and chat with you about my impressive job. You dumped me, remember?
I was very young.
You said that.
She grabs the paper bag.
It's a lousy excuse.
Beth follows her.
I didn't dump you, Megan. Your grandfather had our marriage annulled.
Beth throws the bag in a trash can and continues on.
I let them take you. I didn't know how to fight back.
Megan slows her pace and smiles.
That's semantics. How does one take a one-year-old baby?
I had no money, no job, nowhere to go with you. I was in high school, Megan. I didn't know the first thing about being a parent or a wife.
Why didn't you come and get me when you knew better?
She faces her mother.
I think I was scared.
Megan studies Beth's confused stare.
And did you and my father at least love each other?
Yes.
Beth nods and smiles warmly.
Why did he let you go?
They continue walking.
He was a kid, too. Your grandfather was very convincing.
My grandparents were very good to me.
I'm glad.
You know, Greg wasn't much of a father. I never lived with him.
I know.
And my stepmother didn't want me around. Lucky I don't believe in self-pity.
Lucky.
They trade smiles. Megan turns.
No one ever talked about you. I never saw any pictures. I had to make you up.
Didn't my letters help?
What letters? I wrote to you. All the time. Sent presents.
Megan bites her lip and glances away. Her grin fades.
I remarried.
Beth gazes at her.
You have a sister.
Megan's eyes dart sharply to meet her mother's. She gazes blankly.
A sister.
Beth reaches toward her.
Can I buy you a cup of coffee?
Later, in an outdoor cafe, Megan grins at Lori's baby photos.
Lori looks a lot like me. Don't you think?
Beth nods.
I do.
You wouldn't have come if Lori wasn't sick, would you?
I always wanted to. I always hoped you'd find me. When you didn't answer my letters, I thought I should leave you alone.
You wouldn't have come.
Staring at the photos, Megan grins.
So does she know about me?
No.
Why not?
I've always been afraid to tell her.
But you want me to give her my bone marrow. If I was the one who had leukemia, you wouldn't be driving around looking for donors. You wouldn't even know about it. You're not very brave, are you? Or honest.
I'm trying.
Yeah, well, it's a little late for that.
Megan gives a firm nod.
I'm sorry.
I bet you are.
Megan opens her wallet and removes a bill.
You know what? I have a lot of work to do.
As Megan stands, Beth reaches for her purse.
I'll get this.
Not on a bet.
Megan lays down the money.
I guess I'm supposed to say, it was nice meeting you, Beth.
As her daughter walks away, Beth sits staring at the table. Now, in their home, Ken feeds a large schematic drawing through a format scanner. As the drawing rolls out over the glow of the scanner's blue light, Ken lifts his head and turns toward the door. Beth enters and swings her purse off her shoulder.
Hiya.
Hi.
She puts it on the table.
Any luck?
Beth reaches into her pocket and hands Ken Megan's business card.
You saw her?
Beth nods.
Yeah.
And?
Beth lets out a breath and looks away.
And she was wonderful. And she hates me.
She wouldn't?
Beth shakes her head. Ken touches her arm.
Sorry. Would it help if I talked to her?
Beth shakes her head and they drop their eyes toward the floor.
Judy?
Well, there's tuna in the refrigerator. I made lots.
Thanks.
Beth heads toward the door.
Feel like some company?
She turns.
Yeah.
Ken follows. Now, in the bathroom, Beth faces Molly holding a terry cloth robe decorated with doggy ears and eyes on its hood.
Here we go. Hold on tight. Good girl.
She slips it over Molly's head.
Peek-a-boo! Peek-a-boo! Where's that doggy? Where's that doggy?
Beth carries the infant into the hall.
Didn't you like that bath?
Rubbing Molly's back, Beth's eyes widen as Lori approaches.
That's so good. Look, Mommy's up from her nap. Hi.
Lori takes Molly.
This is Mommy's little girl. Oh, doggy. Yeah. Did you have a good bath with Nanny?
They enter Molly's bedroom.
You okay? Uh-huh. Oh. It's okay. It's okay.
Beth watches Lori holding Molly beside the crib.
This is where I was standing. 1 minute I was putting my little girl to bed. And the next my whole world changed.
Molly makes a sour face and Lori peers into her eyes. Beth gazes sadly at her daughter.
She's not going to remember me. You're with her now, Lori. Be with her now.
As tears well in her eyes, Lori turns to Molly and wipes them away. She strokes the baby's face.
Mommy's here.
Yeah, Mommy's here. Oh, don't cry.
Leaning on the door jamb, Beth smiles wistfully. Now, Beth's SUV rolls down her neighborhood street and around the corner toward her house. Megan sits watching from a sporty red convertible parked at the curb. As Beth pulls into her driveway, Megan gets out and crosses the street. Beth hops out of the Jeep. Taking off her sunglasses, Beth rushes down the drive toward her daughter. Megan sways her interlaced fingers from side to side and gazes intensely at her mother.
Hi. Hi. I'll take the blood test.
Beth smiles.
I'd do it for anybody. If I'm a match, just tell her she can count on me.
I'm glad you came.
Don't be. You're nothing to me. I'm doing it for Lori. As far as I'm concerned, you're her mother. Her mother, and that's all.
Okay.
You just tell me where and when, and I'll be there.
Thank you.
Beth stands motionless and gazes steadily at her eldest daughter. Megan shifts her gaze, then turns and walks back to her car. Without looking back, she gets into the driver's seat. Shifting slightly on her feet, Beth parts her lips, then closes them tightly. Her eyes dart away from the departing convertible. Beth watches Megan drive away, then hangs her head and turns toward the house. In Beth's kitchen.
What time does Megan go in tomorrow?
I don't know. I gave Janet her number. She's going to make the arrangements.
You want me to be with you when you tell Lori about Megan?
I don't think I'm going to tell her. Not yet.
With tightened lips, Ken lowers his gaze.
Why not?
I want to wait, make sure.
What earthly difference is that going to make? Beth, don't you think Lori deserves to know the truth either way?
Why are you getting angry?
Because I think Lori deserves more respect than this. The hospital, the doctors, everybody knows about Megan except Lori and Jesse, the two people who matter the most in this.
I just think it's unfair to Lori while she's going through all of this.
It's never been fair, Beth. For either of them, it's only been easier for you. This isn't about you, Beth. What are you planning on doing? Just waiting? And if there's no match, then you'll never have to face this?
Beth glares at her husband, walks to the opposite side of the kitchen, and stands with her back to him. Ken watches her for a moment, then storms out. With her head lowered, she places her hands on the kitchen counter, then puts one on her hip. Beth glances toward the living room, turns back, and gazes off. Now, Vic walks through his house and opens the front door.
Well, look who's here. Hello, sweetheart.
Hi, Grandpa.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Oh, of course. Did you drive all the way here so late?
No, the chauffeur brought me.
Kate, look who I found.
Oh, my goodness. Hello, sweetheart.
Hi, Grandma.
What do we got to offer, Katie?
Oh, I'll get some dinner.
No, that's okay. I'm not hungry. I'll get something at home.
Ah, lasagna's probably not even cold yet. You can heat that up in a minute.
Grandma, I'm not hungry.
Kate leaves the room.
I'm saving this article I've been meaning to show you. It's so funny.
Megan paces in front of the fireplace as her grandfather looks through a small magazine.
Grandpa, did my mother ever write to me?
The old man stares slack-jawed at Megan.
What's going on, Megan?
She sits on the fireplace.
Just answer me.
That's old business. Your mother gave you up, and that was the end of it.
Did she write to me, Grandma?
Kate enters.
You haven't second thoughts about how we brought you up?
No. No, this has nothing to do with the way you brought me up. I know that you love me. I have to know why you never gave me the letters.
I thought it was for the best. Don't blame your grandma.
Megan drops her gaze, then smiles at Vic.
Did you at least keep them?
No.
I have the letters, Megan.
Vic gapes at his wife, and Megan rises to her feet. Now, Kate opens a wooden chest. She reaches under neatly folded linens, pulls out a wrinkled manila envelope, and hands it to her granddaughter. With a furrowed brow, Megan stares at the envelope. Her grandmother stands behind her.
He
didn't want to mix you up. This was your home. We were your family.
As Kate leaves, she touches her granddaughter's shoulder. Megan stands motionless as she gazes at the envelope.
Grandma.
Kate faces her granddaughter.
Did you think it was for the best, too?
I never knew. I still don't know.
Kate walks down the hallway. Megan watches her briefly, then looks back at the envelope in her hands. Taking a deep breath, she sits on a bed and opens it. More than 24 smaller envelopes fall onto the bed. Megan runs a hand over the letters, spreading them out on the flower-patterned comforter. She opens an envelope and pulls out a card with a photo of a Christmas wreath on it. Unfolding the card, she finds a $10 bill. Megan sighs, then smiles as she reads the card. Our view slowly backs down the hall from Megan as she sits on the edge of the bed. She puts the Christmas card down, picks up a letter, and reads it. Now, in the hospital, Beth sits in a waiting room and reads a magazine. As she takes a deep breath, she sets the magazine aside and checks her watch. Behind Beth, Megan enters the room, spots her mother, and approaches her. Beth gazes off.
I figured you'd be here.
Beth quickly looks up at Megan.
Is it all right? I guess.
Megan sits beside her mother.
They're usually on time?
Pretty much.
So what are you doing? Trying to hedge your bet with another kid just in case this doesn't turn out to have a happy ending?
Beth stares sternly at Megan, who looks down with an embarrassed smile.
I could never replace Lori. And she never replaced you.
They face each other with sober gazes.
Megan Hollander?
Yes.
Megan stands up.
We're ready for you.
The nurse looks at Beth.
You can wait for her right here.
As the nurse heads off, Megan looks at her mother.
I thought I might be able to go in with you.
I'm a big girl.
Megan follows the nurse. Beth sits back down, checks her watch, and leans her head back. Now at Lori's house, Jesse stands in the kitchen and pours milk into a plastic cup as Molly sits in a high chair in the dining room.
Look, look. You want some milk, huh? Come on.
Look, it's okay.
He sets the milk in a plate down on the high chair table, then goes back into the kitchen. Molly knocks the cup over and the milk spills. Jesse stands at the kitchen sink, then rushes back to his baby.
Molly, sweetie, don't.
He picks up the cup and steps back into the kitchen.
Hold on. I'll be right there.
As he returns with a sponge, Molly's food splatters on the wall and Jesse.
Molly, I can't do this right now. I'm sorry, honey.
He crouches next to the toddler as Lori enters the room. She stares open-mouthed at Jesse, who looks up at her. Jesse throws the sponge down as he walks to the phone.
Hello? Yeah. Oh, hi. Yeah? When? Thank you very much.
Jesse gapes.
Oh, my God, Lori. They found somebody.
Lori exhales and smiles. Now, at Beth's house, Lori's mother rushes into Ken's office.
Ken?
The
hospital just called the kids. They think it's a match.
Yes!
Is it Megan?
Yeah. Oh, thank God.
Ken lifts his eyebrows and smiles. Now at Lori's house, Jesse plays with Molly.
Look.
Grab it.
Yeah!
All right. Hi, where's everybody?
In here.
Beth and Ken enter Molly's room, and Beth takes Jesse's hands in hers.
She's gonna make it.
Got a present for Molly, Dolly. Another present.
Yes,
Lori.
Here we go. Oh, she's in the back.
Ken gives Jesse a box, and Beth heads out. Jesse pulls a white stuffed animal from the box. In the backyard, Lori lies on a chaise lounge. Under the shade of a tree, she writes in a journal. Lori looks up as Beth approaches her.
Can you believe it? And I thought the odds were one in a million.
Beth stares sheepishly.
It wasn't random.
She takes a seat next to her daughter and faces her squarely.
I referred someone.
What do you mean you referred?
Her name is Megan Hollander.
Ben?
And she's related.
Megan. Do I know her?
Not yet.
Mom, who is she?
Beth stares into Lori's eyes.
She's my daughter. My first child.
You're not serious.
I was married for a very short time. Her father's parents adopted her.
Why didn't you tell me? You always tell me everything. Does Dad know?
Yes.
Where's she been all this time?
About an hour from here.
For the first time in my life, I don't know what to say. What's she like?
She's smart. Successful. And right now, pretty angry.
I'll bet. Am I gonna get to meet her?
If you want to.
Of course I do. Mom, I don't understand. Why was this such a big secret?
Lots of reasons that don't seem very rational anymore.
24 years and I thought I knew exactly who you were.
Beth nods and lowers her gaze. Lori sets her journal aside and stands up.
So, why exactly did you think that you couldn't tell me? What do you think I do?
Lori picks up a pitcher and pours a glass of lemonade.
I thought you might not understand.
Lori sets the pitcher down and smiles at her mother.
You obviously don't know me as well as you thought you did either.
Maybe.
I always wanted a sister. I always pretended.
Lori gazes at her mother, who smiles and shakes her head. The young woman takes a sip from her glass, crosses her arms, and smiles. At a park's playground.
Come on, Timmy.
A little girl rides down a slide as a woman watches. Nearby, a young blonde woman helps Molly with a puzzle. Lori watches blankly from a bench as passers-by walk in front of her. Molly lifts the puzzle board, then lets it fall. Lori's eyes shift and she gazes off. On the sidewalk, Beth and Megan approach. Beth points toward the playground and Megan walks with her hands folded before her. Lori forces a smile as the women draw close.
Hi, sweetheart.
Hi.
Hi. Well, it's about time you showed up.
Megan and Beth swap a look.
I see the resemblance.
Lori bites her lip.
My hair's about the same color as yours when I have it.
Except mine's from a bottle.
I knew it. Clairol E64.
That's right.
Mom, could you hit Molly? She can hit Megan.
Megan watches her mother as she steps away. The half-sisters face each other.
Thank you.
You don't have to thank me.
I hope I'd do the same for you.
I'm sure you would. It's too bad that this is the reason we get to meet.
Beth arrives with Molly, who sucks her thumb.
Oh, Molly, this is Megan. Say hi.
Megan lifts her niece.
Hey, is your thumb good?
It looks good.
Hi.
Hi, Jess.
Megan, I'd like you to meet my husband, Jesse. Jesse, this is Megan.
Hi. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. Thank you for doing this.
Please.
Jesse faces his wife.
Okay, you ready?
No, but do I have a choice?
Come on, get up.
Maybe it won't be as tough as time.
Dreamer.
Judy, could you,
Lori takes Molly from Beth's arms and hands her off to the young blonde.
Okay. Be good.
There you go. I'll see you in a couple hours, Jane.
Okay. It was really great to meet you.
It was great meeting you. I'll see you again, huh?
Okay.
As Lori steps away, Beth blows her a kiss. Jesse and Lori walk with their arms around each other.
She's wonderful. Very brave.
As Megan eyes the couple, Beth watches her.
Yeah.
Megan heaves a sigh.
I have to get back to work.
Beth nods. As the two women step away, Judy combs Molly's hair. Later, in a green-lit hospital room, Lori lays on a bed. A doctor arrives, clipboard in hand. As a 10-foot-high machine shaped like a faucet moves into an upright position, the top section of the bed slides Lori under it. The bed comes to a stop, with Lori's head and torso lying below a donut-shaped nozzle. The room lights turn off, and the doctor steps in front of two black-and-white monitors showing different angles on Lori. Now several people converse in the lobby of the cancer center. Beth enters through the sliding doors.
Janet, what's up?
Beth, thanks for coming. Dr. Webster needs to talk to you.
Beth follows the social worker down a corridor. Janet opens an office door for Beth.
Beth, have a seat.
Webster motions to a chair.
You haven't found something to change your mind, have you?
No, not at all.
Beth sits.
Then why am I here?
Well, we'd like to confirm our results with one last test.
What test?
More comprehensive workups for HLA typing of your blood and, our father's blood.
Beth's eyes narrow.
Why?
Because Lori's chances of survival increase if the father's typing is a match. And since your husband isn't Lori's biological father, we need to take...
Beth's eyes dart furtively.
You knew that, didn't you?
Beth shifts her gaze.
I didn't know for sure.
Blinking, Janet averts her gaze. Beth stares with parted lips, then faces the doctor.
Let me explain.
No, you don't have to.
I do. I want you to understand. My husband and I were separated for a few months.
Beth, the only issue is we need to test the biological father.
Beth stares nervously.
What if that's not possible?
Then we won't have all the information we need.
Open-mouthed, Beth stares pleadingly at Dr. Webster. Her gaze falls upon his cluttered desk as she fights back tears.
Would you have to say anything? I mean, isn't there, doctor-patient confidentiality?
I promise you, we won't say a thing.
I plan to tell them. It's just that things are very hard right now for Lori and everybody.
Beth, please. It's none of our business. We absolutely respect your privacy.
Beth stares downward and nods hesitantly. She eyes Janet, who smiles. Beth swallows hard.
Okay. Thank you.
Beth rises and Dr. Webster gets up. As she reaches the door, Beth hesitates and half turns, then leaves. Janet turns away from the door. Now, a window's Venetian blinds frame two doctors who walk outside the cancer center holding clipboards. Inside a waiting room, Beth holds a phone.
This is Beth.
Her eyes dart.
Can you meet me?
As her gaze wells with tears, Beth nods.
Yes. How long? I'll be there.
She hangs up. Now, back at the beach, sunlight dapples the brilliantly rippling waves. Beth stares across the water. Greg pokes her with a finger.
Beth?
My daughter is dying.
I've heard.
Beth faces Greg.
Megan is giving Lori the best chance she has.
Oh, she would, like I said. She's a great kid.
Beth nods as Greg turns toward the water.
She's your daughter too, Greg.
Who?
Lori.
I beg your pardon.
The weekend, you remember, had a lasting effect.
They climb down from a railing and sit on the pier.
Now, how would you know that? You and Ken got back together right after.
I always suspected. The DNA confirmed it.
Well, you could have at least informed me.
What good would that have done? You had a new wife, a baby. Besides, you wouldn't have stood up to your father.
Well, you should have given me a chance, Beth.
She meets his gaze.
The hospital needs a sample of your blood before they can do the transplant.
Then what?
I can't think further than that.
Wind whips through their hair.
Will you do it?
Greg gazes down.
Sure. Yeah.
Thank you.
I miss you, Beth.
He reaches out to Beth. She shakes her head. Gazing down, she reaches into her pocket.
This is the social worker's number. Call her and she'll arrange the lab.
Swallowing hard, Beth backs away, then heads toward the parking lot. Greg drops his gaze, then watches her make her way down the pier. Resting his elbow on his raised knee, he gazes toward the ocean and twiddles his thumb. Jesse enters the living room.
Hey, I slaved over that meal.
He lifts a tray.
Leave it. If I'm hungry, I'll eat it, okay?
Okay.
Lori lays on the sofa.
I gotta go back to the office.
He kisses her cheek.
Molly's next door at the diner. She'll be okay.
He turns to go.
Did you wash her hair?
I'm handling it, Lori. She's had a bath. Her ears are clean. She even liked my lunch.
Lori beams. Jesse puts on his suit coat.
Promise me you'll never put her second.
He hesitates as he buttons up.
You want to talk about what I'm going to do with Molly when you're dead?
Lori shuts her eyes.
I just think we need to be realistic.
Is that going to cheer you up?
Yeah, it'll make me feel better.
Okay. I won't rush for potty training. She's going to have the best schools. She's going to take piano lessons.
He spreads his arms.
Why? Why do you have to think about these things?
Lori rolls her tear-filled eyes.
What else am I supposed to think about?
Think about that you're going to be okay. That you're going to be with me while Molly grows up.
Jesse stares intently at Lori. She averts her gaze, then eyes her husband. Jesse turns toward the door, places his hands on his hips, and faces Lori.
I love you.
He nods and touches his temple.
Good thought, okay?
She grins.
Okay.
Jesse returns her smile, crosses the room, and opens the door. Megan stands on the porch holding a bouquet.
Hi.
Hi.
Take care of her, will you? She's into bloom and doom.
Hey, we just met a few days ago.
I know, but she likes you, she told me.
Jesse waves on his way out.
Hi.
Hi.
As Jesse shuts the door, Megan approaches the sofa.
How are you feeling? Can I get you anything?
No.
Bye. I brought these for you.
Lori takes the flowers.
They're beautiful. Sit.
The bouquet contains purple, pink, and white flowers. Megan sits, leaning forward stiffly and folding her hands.
This is kind of bizarre, isn't it? And what if we get to know each other and we don't get along?
Well, I'll tell you right now, I have got my faults.
Lori grins.
Big mouth, bad temper, judgmental as hell.
Well, I'm moody, too sensitive, and I cry at commercials.
As Megan's smile fades, she bites her lip.
She really blew it, didn't she?
Big time.
Open-mouthed, Lori stares blankly.
She is a good person.
I guess I ran into her on a bad day.
Megan blinks and lowers her gaze. Lori raises her brow. She nods and shuts her eyes.
They've scheduled the transplant for tomorrow.
You sure you want to do it?
You bet.
Megan places a hand on Lori's knee, then glances off toward a table.
That sandwich. You gonna eat it?
No, it's yours.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Nighttime. Ken sits at his drafting table.
Ken?
He looks up as he writes.
Ken?
Beth stands in the doorway.
Hi. Well, she's all settled in. The hospital's given the thumbs up.
No.
Why is it so dark in the house?
Beth flips on the light.
Turn that off, please.
Ken peeks over his shoulder. Beth's eyes narrow and she complies. Ken's jaw works as he writes. Beth approaches from behind.
You okay?
He stares down at the table.
You were supposed to meet us at the hospital.
Oh, I was there.
Aren't you pleased?
I'm praying for her, Beth.
Ken flips a page in a binder.
Then what's wrong?
Avoiding her gaze, he lifts his pen from the paper and caps it.
Well, you see, I thought they'd made a mistake. I looked at the chart. I thought they'd got hold of the wrong results.
He stares down.
The father was listed as type A, and my blood type is type O. I certainly didn't want them to make a mistake.
Beth's eyes dart. Removing his glasses, Ken swivels in his chair to face her.
How long have you known Beth?
Ken.
Is that why you came back to me? Because you were pregnant?
No.
Because I was convenient?
No, Ken.
I didn't deserve that.
He shuts his binder and gets up.
Not that I give a damn about blood type.
He slams the notebook onto a shelf.
Lori is my daughter. I raised her. I love her.
Beth fights back tears.
It's your lie. Not mine. It certainly isn't hers.
Beth shoots Ken a teary-eyed look.
Let's be very clear about this. Please, Beth. I am her father. For as long as we have her. Don't you dare try to take that away from me.
Ken locks his gaze on Beth, then heads for the door. As Beth stares ahead, her hand trembles. Her head convulses in sobs. Shaking unsteadily on her feet, she lifts a hand to her mouth. Nighttime. In the Bradfield home, a toy acrobat sits propped between parallel bars. Nearby, Beth wearily climbs the stairs to the bedroom.
Ken?
Her grave stare rests on the bed as she crosses the room with a slow and steady pace.
Ken?
She stops at the foot of the bed and rests her hand against the wrought iron footboard.
We have to talk.
In his clothes, Ken lies quietly on his side, resting on the pillow with his arm under his head. He gazes straight ahead.
Not right now.
He shuts his eyes and swallows.
Do you want me to sleep in the other room?
Ken opens his eyes and gazes blankly ahead.
I don't care.
Beth's gaze lingers on his face, then lowers. She shifts her weight, then turns away from the foot of the bed. As she leaves the room, Ken closes his eyes tightly. Later, Beth sits at the kitchen table in her robe, clutching a coffee mug. A lamp's pale light illuminates the phone at her elbow.
Hello?
Hi. I didn't wake you, did I?
No. And even if you did, that'd be all right.
I'm scared, Mom.
I'm on my way.
In Lori's hospital room.
Now just talk to me for a minute. They start the heavy stuff in the morning.
Keep thinking. In a few days, it'll all be over.
In a few days, I might be dead.
Lori.
Don't deny it, Mom. I hate it when nobody will talk to me about it.
Beth stares ahead with weary red eyes.
I know you're scared, honey. And I know you might die.
Lori wipes away tears as she clutches the phone in the other hand.
You know, I've had a good life. Not as long as I wanted, but it's been good.
And you've given back so much.
Thanks.
I'll be there in the morning before they start.
Beth forces a smile. Lori closes her eyes.
Is Daddy up?
Beth shifts her eyes.
Yeah, I think so.
I want to say goodnight.
Hold on.
Beth shifts in her chair, then smiles.
I love you, honey.
Lori grins and closes her eyes.
I love you.
Beth sets down the receiver. In the dark bedroom, Beth turns on a nightstand lamp.
Ken, Lori's on the phone.
Beth sits on the bed and hands him a cordless phone.
You didn't tell her.
Beth shakes her head. Ken activates the phone, then holds the receiver against his chest as he stares at his wife. As Beth gets up and heads toward the door, he puts the phone to his ear.
Hi, honey.
Ken lies on his back with the phone close to his lips. Outside, Beth walks down the patio steps. She glances to the left and right, then folds her arms in front of her against the night air. Beth's eyes dart about pensively, then she slowly lifts her gaze skyward. A half moon shines in the starless sky. Our view looks down at Beth as she stands on the patio's brick floor amid potted plants and wooden furniture. Now, an IV tube dangles down to Lori's arm as she sleeps in her hospital gown and scrub cap. Jesse lies in his clothes beside her. He opens his eyes.
Jess. How the heck did I wake? I didn't even move.
I heard your eyes open.
As Jesse smiles and rubs her arm, Lori closes her eyes.
I gotta go. I want to be home before Molly wakes up.
To sleep?
Like a rock.
Liar.
They grin, then Lori's smile fades. Jesse lifts his head up and leans over her shoulder.
You okay?
You're not supposed to ask. Not today.
You humor me.
Jesse holds her arm firmly, presses his face against her back, and kisses her.
I love you.
With her eyes closed, Lori smiles.
I'll be back real soon.
Jesse gently stands. As he leaves, Lori lies with her eyes shut, her head pillowed on her arm. Daytime. On the hospital grounds, Ken and Beth come down a sidewalk to the cancer center. Wearing coats, they pass a bench, newspaper dispensers, and elevated vases filled with plants and go inside. Later, entering Lori's room, they stand on either side of her bed.
You made it.
Sure did.
You know what Jesse did?
What?
He came last night and stayed with me. Don't leave till he come get me. Promise?
Promise.
Even if I fall asleep,
we'll be here.
Okay?
Ken and Beth gaze at the patient as she falls asleep. In the hallway area, a nurse in scrubs pushes Megan's wheelchair past the reception desk. Megan wears a hospital gown, pajama pants, and slippers. She frowns sleepily as the nurse wheels her toward Lori's room. Propped up in her bed, Lori rests peacefully, breathing through an oxygen tube in her nostrils. Outside her door, the nurse ties a mask to Megan's face. She wheels Megan into the room and parks her beside Lori's bed.
Hi.
Hi.
How you doing?
Lori grins and nods.
Great.
She briefly closes her eyes, then gazes at her sister.
Did it hurt? Not much. I was asleep.
Lori grins weakly. Megan's gaze shifts upward toward the other side of the bed.
Is that
Lori glances at the blood in the IV.
You know the old saying, what's yours is mine and what's mine is mine.
The transparent bag tubed to Lori's arm is half empty.
Yeah.
Now in a waiting area, Jesse watches TV.
Chances like this are never offered twice. This is it. I've been waiting for it, dreaming of it all my life, even when I was a kid.
He crosses to the water fountain and drinks. Beth, Ken, and Janet sit with heads bowed. In her wheelchair, Megan rests her head on one hand. As Dr. Webster enters, they all look up.
She's very slow in responding to the new marrow. Now, it's not uncommon, but it's of some concern. Megan, I know you're not feeling great, but we'll need some platelets in the next day or two, so if you'd be willing.
Megan nods.
Sure.
Great.
As Webster leaves, Jesse faces Beth.
Beth, I'm going to go
inside. He leaves. Beth looks across the chair between them and briefly meets Ken's gaze. Their eyes again drop toward the floor.
The only thing worth having is peace of mind, and money can't buy that.
Later, in the hallway outside Lori's room, Ken and Beth watch through the window as Jesse, in mask and gown, sits beside the sleeping patient. Ken leans his elbows against the windowsill and holds his glasses. His eyes blink wearily. Beth stands a yard away, at the other end of the window. Later, at a table, Megan gazes wistfully over a cup of coffee. Beth approaches.
Megan?
Hi.
Any changes?
No.
Beth sits.
Now it's her immune system.
Can't they do anything else for her?
Maybe more antibiotics.
Megan fidgets with the rim of her styrofoam cup. Beth faces her.
You said you'd do it for anyone. You said you'd show up. You did a lot more than that.
And whatever you think of me,
I think you're remarkable.
Megan meets Beth's gaze for a moment, then thoughtfully glances away and nods her head.
Did you really whisper to me? And listen to my heartbeat?
Beth looks up and gazes at her out of the corners of her eyes. Megan glances at her with a slight smile.
I read your letters.
Beth smiles, nods, and blinks back tears.
Yeah.
Megan's smile widens.
I'm glad I read them.
The corners of her mouth lift higher, then her smile fades. Beth lays her hand on the table between them. Megan drops her eyes and inches her own hand towards it. Her fingers brush across the back of Beth's hands, then quickly pull back. Now, in a hospital corridor, Jesse rushes through a door as Beth approaches.
She's in a coma.
They rush through the doors and down another hallway. Later, fitted in surgical masks, latex gloves, caps, and gowns, they enter Lori's room. A nurse adjusts Lori's IV and leaves. Beth glances at her, then at the motionless woman in the bed. Lori lies unconscious, with an oxygen mask strapped to her face. Beth gently places her gloved hand on Lori's and rubs her daughter's knuckles with her thumb. Later, in a waiting room, Beth wearily approaches Ken as he stares out a window. Beth faces his back, then walks over to a row of chairs. Beth lowers into one of the chairs and gazes off with a furrowed brow.
I'm being punished for what I did.
Ken turns.
No, Beth.
So are you. So is Lori. Everybody I love.
Ken slouches with downcast eyes. He takes a deep breath and looks up.
No.
He turns back to the Venetian blinds and gazes out the window as Beth stares sadly ahead. Nighttime. Alone in her dimly lit room, Lori lies motionless. Now in the Bradfield's bedroom, Beth lies in bed with her eyes wide open as Ken sits downstairs near the fireplace. Daytime. In mask and gown, Ken sits beside Lori's bed.
House is so quiet now with you guys gone, it's easy for me to oversleep than I did this morning. But I got up, had a nice leisurely shower, went downstairs. Just the kind of morning you like. Slightly foggy, a little misty. So when the sun burns off the mist, the light into my office is really beautiful.
In Molly's room, Jesse sits in a rocking chair.
I couldn't work this morning. I'm working on the Stevens place. Just didn't have an idea in my head. So I started cleaning up around the drafting table. I found one of your mom's earrings. A long time ago when you've been told to stay out of my office because you...
In her kitchen, Beth sits with a coffee mug.
But you'd play in there anyway.
Now Jesse sits beside Lori's bed.
So I made some phone calls, puttered around for a while.
Back with Ken.
Then sat back down at the drafting table and the idea started to come. I worked pretty well. Worked pretty well. Some nice stuff.
Daytime. In Lori's hospital room, Beth sits slumped in the bedside chair with her eyes closed. Her masked and capped head rests on her gloved hand. In the bed, Lori's eyes blink awake.
Mom?
Lori turns toward the chair.
Mom?
Beth opens her eyes and gazes at her daughter, then abruptly snaps out of her slumber and leans toward the bed. Under her oxygen mask, Lori smiles.
I see that.
Later, Ken, still wearing sanitary garb, stands at the foot of the bed and pours a glass of water from a pitcher. He carries it to the side of the bed and hands it to Lori.
Here you go, sweetheart.
Thanks.
How do you feel?
Like hell, but I bet I look great.
To me, you do.
Where's Mom?
She and Jesse had some things to pick up. They ran an errand.
I really scared you guys, didn't I?
Megan opens the door and enters.
Hey.
Hello.
Hi. It's about time you woke up.
You did good.
So did you.
Beth, Jesse, and Molly are at the window.
Hello. Look who's here.
Hi. Hi. Hi, Molly.
As Jesse blows a kiss, Beth waves Molly's arm.
Yeah.
Good wave.
Lori blows a kiss and smiles back at them. Jesse, Molly, and Beth continue to wave and gesture through the glass. Now, at a construction site on a cleared expanse of land, men in hard hats work on a large building frame. Trees surround the clearing, and the sun rests low in the sky behind them. Beth's Jeep pulls up and parks beside a row of pickups along a chain-link fence. She gets out and approaches the fence's gate. She spots Greg and a stocky man facing the hood of a pickup near the structure. As they study a scroll of blueprints laid out on the hood, Beth approaches.
Working the center out. All of these.
Greg spots Beth standing beside him. He faces the stocky man.
Excuse me, Bob?
Sure.
How'd I get so lucky?
Can we talk somewhere?
How about over there? You want some coffee?
He removes his hard hat and they walk.
You look tired.
Beth pushes her hair off her brow.
Lori almost died.
God.
I think she's going to be okay.
Greg walks a step behind her, swinging his arms.
You might want to see her eventually.
No, I don't think so. Maybe if she needs some blood or something, but I'm not going to go see her.
Why? What are you afraid of?
I'm not afraid.
Your father?
What's this about?
Why did you let him destroy our family? Megan asked me that question. I couldn't answer her.
We were too young.
She thought that was a lame excuse. So do I.
What do you want from me, Beth, huh?
To try to understand what happened to us.
What happened is we were kids.
Stop saying that! You sound just like your father.
He turns and faces her.
We loved each other. We loved Megan. What was this hold he had over you?
He was my father. And if you remember at the time, I'm thousands of miles away in Vietnam.
Can't you take any responsibility? Just share it with me.
Oh, and you're the righteous one, huh? Does any of this stuff stick to you?
It's all over me. I'm sick from carrying it.
Greg shrugs with an easy smile.
Then let it go, Beth.
As Greg shakes his head, Beth scrutinizes his face. She nods knowingly and meets his gaze.
I think I know why I came here today.
Looking up into his face, Beth smiles.
I came to say goodbye. All these years have been a fantasy that never got resolved.
Greg lowers his eyes and Beth gives him a quick nod.
Take care, Greg.
She walks away. Greg stands motionless for a second, then turns and watches her go out the gate of the chain-link fence. As Beth turns toward her Jeep, she runs her hand through her hair and strokes her chin. Greg puts on his hard hat and walks back toward the pickup. As he stops, turns, and looks back, a bulldozer passes. As our view rises above the site, construction workers continue their labor. On the horizon, red sunlight peeks over the treetops. Nighttime. At the Bradfield house, Ken sits on the front steps, rubbing his beard and gazing toward the driveway. Beth gets out of the Jeep and crosses the yard toward him. His fingers at his lips, he stares blankly at her. Holding her purse under her arm, Beth stops and returns his gaze. She gives him a nod and smiles.
Hi.
Ken lowers his hand from his mouth and straightens his back.
I know how much I've hurt you.
You have no idea.
Under Ken's gaze, Beth drops her eyes.
When you went back and slept with him,
Ken gazes at Beth with calm steadiness.
Did you love her?
Yes.
Beth meets his eyes and nods. Ken nods back and removes his glasses.
Well, at least now you're telling the truth.
Beth stands motionless, her eyes well with tears.
Lori is yours. In all the ways that count.
Ken nods with a hurt smile and mouths the word, yeah. As he nervously dangles his glasses, Beth walks over and sits beside him. She leans gently against his shoulder.
Can we get past this?
Ken heaves a sigh.
Beth, I've lost a battle I didn't even know I was fighting.
He sadly shakes his head.
I'm not sure I know who you are anymore.
I'm the woman who loves you.
The solid guy. Comfortable old shoe.
The caring one. The man I've been making love to all of my life that matters.
Ken stares off toward the street, then turns and faces her.
I'm not ready, Beth.
Oh, wait. You waited a long time for me.
With a slight smile, Ken averts his eyes. He puts on his glasses and starts to stand up.
They were good years, weren't they?
Beth smiles at him.
They were wonderful years.
Ken's gaze lingers on her. He smiles slightly, then stands up and heads toward the front door. As he goes inside, Beth remains on the steps. Soft moonlight shines on her weary face. Later, Beth continues to sit and stare out toward the street. As our view moves back from the house, Beth's seated figure grows smaller in the distance. A lamp shines in the living room window, and the porch light glows down on Beth. As Beth shifts her body slightly, the leafy branches of a tree frame her in the light. Fade to black.